Here we go. This is John Rappaport. I want to thank you for the chance to talk to you. 30 minutes, going to pile in as much information as I possibly can. So let's start here. They never discovered a new virus. And that's my talk for today. Thank you very much. I appreciate you paying close attention because, you know, that takes quite a bit. That's the beginning and the end of the story. What else is there to say? And just think about it. 30 minutes just went by like that, didn't it? Fantastic. Okay, they never discovered a new virus. What does that mean? Let me expand. They never used proper discovery procedures in saying there was a new epidemic virus. Why is that important? Because on the back of their so-called discovery, they launched a global attack on the population, locking down, I don't know what percentage of the world, but a major percentage, wrecking economies and human lives left and right, not with a virus, with an economic war. So it pays to be careful when you say, here's the new virus that we found. How did you do it? Why can't the uninitiated get into the holy of holies in the lab and see exactly what you're doing step by step and film it and have independent, non-conflicted observers there to witness these momentous events to see what you actually mean and do and say when you announce we found a new virus? They never discovered a new virus by proper procedures. Thank you very much. That's the lecture. That's the beginning and the end of it. Everything else flows from that. Meaningless diagnostic tests, because what are they testing for? Meaningless case numbers based on meaningless diagnostic tests, plus meaningless eyeball diagnosis happening all over the world, etc., etc., etc. Now, it's not my problem to decide what they were really doing in the lab when they said they discovered a new virus or what they were fiddling and diddling with. That's their problem. I don't have to have the mysterious ability to dart into the vapors and discover exactly what do they have there. Do they really have a specimen that was purified and isolated of a new virus to begin with, which they then sequenced, so to speak? Or were they working with just a piece of RNA from some old coronavirus or some other decaying virus or exosomes or random genetic material or cellular debris or some other bunch of crap? Not my problem. Their problem to prove that wasn't what they were doing. Now, everybody and his brother wants to save the virus. I understand. It's like religion. We have to save the virus no matter what we do. If somebody like me casts doubt on the discovery of the new virus, other people have to chime in and tell all kinds of stories about it's not just the virus, it's the virus plus X that's really causing the problem. It's the susceptibility of the old people to the virus, meaning the virus looks down at somebody and says, wow, he just turned 65. I'm going to attack him. Or it's some sort of microwave from outer space that activates the dormant sleeping virus that ordinarily would cause no problems, and suddenly it's a killer and it destroys half the planet. Or whatever, whatever, whatever. Save the virus. These stories multiply like crazy. I'm not interested in them. I'm interested, as I have been all along, in going back to the root of the poisonous tree, which is in that lab or in these labs where these religious ceremonies called science are going on, and people are claiming to have discovered a new virus. Because for me and others whom I have spoken with over the 30 years that I've been covering dud epidemics of one kind or another, I go to the traditional electron microscope school of thought. Here's the study that should have been done, that was never done, and will never be done, so pay attention, please. Take 1,000 people who have been diagnosed with the pandemic disease, line them up, take tissue samples from all of them, put all these samples through proper, correct, purifying, isolating procedures, including centrifuge and so on, density layers, remove from the result in all 1,000 samples the relevant material, put it under electron microscopes, and take photos of what you see. Line up these 1,000 photos from 1,000 patients side by side, line them up, baby, and look at each one side by side. In all of them, do you see many, many particles of what is unmistakably a virus, a unique virus, a new virus you've never seen before? If you do, get back to me and I will suggest the confirmatory studies that should be done by other technicians, other researchers using the same method, because after all, that is called the scientific method. You do a large-scale study, you confirm or deny the results by having other people try to replicate it. If you don't find the results uniform among those 1,000 photos under the electron microscope, go back to the drawing board and call yourselves frauds and forget the whole thing. That's the root of the poisonous tree, scientifically speaking. That's where you have to go. If you don't go there, you're missing the vital element. Of course, a lot of people who are critical of COVID-19 official dogma don't want to go to the root because they feel they'll lose their audience. Oh, well, I mean, I can talk about the fiddling and diddling of fake case numbers, 16 different ways it's being done, but I don't want to go there to question the actual discovery of the virus, because then a lot of people will check out and say, that's ridiculous. We all know that a new virus was discovered, and we have to assume that because, you know, it's like taking an organized religion of great size and dimension and history and saying your central tenet is false, or it's unproven, or there's no evidence for it, or there are many counter stories that contradict the way you tell your story, and we don't believe you. In science, that's exactly what happened. No large-scale coherent study using proper procedures, and yet an announcement, we found a new virus. Okay. So then people say, well, but then why are so many people dying? What about this? What about that? How do you explain this? How do you explain that? So I've written about 200 articles on COVID-19 since the beginning. They're all at nomorefakenews.com, a site that I've owned and written on since 2001. And you can read all about the fakery and the fiddling and the diddling and so forth. Mostly the people who are dying of traditional diseases that they've been dying from forever. Flu-like illness, pneumonia, TB, other lung infections as major examples. Repackaged under the empty umbrella label COVID-19. That accounts for a gigantic percentage of what's being called COVID numbers and COVID deaths. As for the others who may be suffering from something new, you would have to go to where they are. What city, what region, what's happening there? Was there a toxic vaccination campaign or two just before the announcement of the outbreak, as apparently was the case in northern Italy, for example? Were there new levels or chronic levels of deadly air pollution, as in Wuhan, northern Italy, certain areas in Spain, etc., etc.? Home in. A new pesticide, perhaps. People talk about the rollout of 5G. Fine, look into that if you're looking for specifics. It is not one thing. COVID-19 is not one thing. Let me repeat that again. It is not one thing. It is not one thing. That is the hypnotic paradigm that has been used to sell germ theory and epidemiology and epidemics fake down through the modern era. One cause, one disease. Fake, fake, fake. As I discovered when I was researching AIDS for my first book back in 1987 and was tremendously confused for months with variant and contradictory data, it all finally fell into place when I realized what they are calling AIDS is not one thing. It is a diverse number of conditions which are suppressing the immune systems in various groups and populations. Immune suppression being the hallmark of supposed AIDS. And if you investigate, which I then did, every so-called at-risk group for AIDS, you would find non-viral factors in each group, mostly different in each group, that would account for all the immune suppression being called AIDS. No need for a new virus, no need whatsoever. It's not one thing. It's not one thing. People are fixated on the one. That is a hypnotic predilection that most people in the world have. And it's not just about science. It's about everything. Show me the one. Give me the one. And I've had people do this with me. They say, my God, that's a fantastic revelation. You just exposed the fact. And I see it now. COVID-19 is not one thing. You've got different groups of people suffering from different, mostly traditional conditions, and it's all being repackaged and relabeled under this fake umbrella term, COVID-19. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I say, good, okay. And then there's just one other thing they say, which is, well, if it isn't the virus, then what is it? They're right back in the one again. If it isn't a virus, it must be some other one. No, it's not some other one. There is no other one. There is no it. That's hypnosis. That's mind control. Let me give you a few examples from history that I've researched about dud epidemics and missing viruses. SARS 2003, travel advisory put on Toronto by the World Health Organization. Don't go to Toronto. Cost the merchants there several billion dollars. Hysteria, people isolating themselves, newspapers running 25 stories a day on SARS. What was the final death tally in Canada? Something like 44 people died. You know, unbelievable. Frank Plummer, the late now Frank Plummer, a microbiologist working for the World Health Organization in Winnipeg, Canada, went to the press, wandered off the reservation, and basically said, you know, more and more we're not seeing the virus in people with SARS. In fact, the number or the percentage of people in which we are seeing the virus who are diagnosed with SARS is approaching zero. That's like saying it ain't SARS, because SARS is defined by the virus. And if you're not finding the virus, what are you talking about? You're talking about ordinary flu-like illness, people with psychological SARS who think their symptoms are adding up to some death-dealing disease, whatever, whatever, whatever. But you're definitely not looking at a virus. That's what he said. He never made those statements again. That was the end of it. And then all of a sudden, Canada, the health authorities there, simply announced that the virus had disappeared. Bom, it was gone. Okay, end of that. It's all over. Forget about it. Let's go back to work. Let's take swine flu 2009. CDC in America in the summer of 2009, is reporting tens of thousands of cases in America. Serious business. They're hyping the vaccine, which Anthony Fauci, by the way, is heartily recommending, saying adverse effects are rare. Turned out the vaccine was very destructive. That's another story. So the CDC is announcing thousands of cases of swine flu in the summer of 2009. But secretly, they've stopped counting cases altogether. Yes, indeedy. Now, they're tasked with counting cases and reporting them to the public and the press. That's their main job. Report, and they're not. So, what's going on here? Hyping tens of thousands of cases, not counting cases. Cheryl Atkinson, one of the only investigative reporters at the time, working for a mainstream outlet in America, CBS, decides to find out why, and she does. And she publishes a story on the CBS News website that blows the whistle. Stopped counting because the overwhelming percentage of test samples taken from the most likely swine flu patients are coming back from the lab with no sign of swine flu or any other kind of flu whatsoever. The whole thing is a hoax. It's a complete hoax. Reading easily between the lines of her published story, you see the truth. I interviewed her. I published the interview, and I published excerpts from the interview. And basically, this is what she told me. The people at CBS thought it was a heck of a story, fantastic. They published it, and then a shutdown occurred, because the next step would have been to put it on the CBS evening television news, a much bigger deal, and no outlet would touch it. It was shut down at CBS, and there was no follow-up at CBS on this incredible story of the hoax epidemic that wasn't there, essentially the virus that wasn't there, and no other major media outlet in the world picked up on the story and continued the investigation down the rabbit hole, which certainly tells you something. But, as I discovered, about 3 weeks later, after Cheryl's story was published on the CBS News website, WebMD published an article, and I've cited it and so on, stating the following. Retrospectively, the CDC claims that at the height in the U.S., there were, get this, 22 million cases of swine flu in America. 22 million. So the hypothesis is, if you can't float one lie, tell a much, much bigger lie, which is exactly what the CDC did. So those are just a couple of examples of where is the virus, hoax, dud, epidemics. This has happened before. Definitely happened before. In fact, if you really want to go down the rabbit hole, you look at HIV and AIDS. And I would highly recommend an extremely articulate and somewhat technical interview done by the brilliant independent Los Angeles journalist Christine Johnson with Eleni Papadopoulos of the Perth Group, scientists in Australia, called Does HIV Exist? Quite fantastic. So there you have a great deal, and I have 8 minutes left here. I'm just looking at my clock. Once you enter the fake world of we found the virus, we know we found the virus, and there is a pandemic sweeping across the world. Once you enter that world, then there are all kinds of fakery at that level and inconsistencies and lies and pretensions and so on and so forth. There are so many ways that the case numbers are being faked that it's quite incredible. One of the monumental ways that is not receiving enough publicity is that the CDC has now embedded institutionally in its very definition of a case of COVID-19. What that means is the ability to diagnose without a test whatsoever if the patient has chills and fever or cough and is part of a cohort designated by the CDC to be people, quote, at risk for COVID-19. That's all it takes. And you can say COVID, 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 and they are. And yes, there's more insurance money involved. That's been revealed, especially Medicare money in the U.S. COVID-19 is killing old people to a large degree. The premature forced deaths of old people, mainly in nursing homes and long-term care facilities throughout the world, but also in hospitals and in their own lonely, isolated homes, apartments, etc., etc. Here's the actual picture. You've got many elderly people who are already in trouble health-wise. They have a number of long-term, traditional, serious health conditions. They've been treated with toxic meds and vaccines for decades. Their immune systems are teetering on the edge. Now we come to the new part. They are terrified by the prospect of being diagnosed with COVID-19 because they're buying all the propaganda naturally. And then they are diagnosed with COVID-19. And then they are isolated and cut off from friends and family completely in the nursing homes, which are locked down, or in their apartments isolated, et cetera, et cetera. And they die prematurely. That's called forced death by diagnosis and isolation, on top of what they like to call comorbidities, meaning what I just described, decades of other serious health conditions. They're all labeled death by COVID-19. If you removed all those numbers, you would see a vastly different official picture. Vastly different. It's murder. It's outright murder. That is largely what's going on. In New York City, which has been called the epicenter, a study was done on patients in New York City, who, and again, we're talking about mainly the elderly, who go to hospital. 65 and older, put on a ventilator, the death rate is, ready, 97.2%. Ventilator involves sedation, very important, heavy sedation, plus ventilator. They don't wake up. Put it down to COVID. Now, some people will say, well, the reason they were put on the ventilator is because they were the most ill to begin with. Forget that. No treatment that has a mortality rate of 97.2 is going to be continued by doctors and nurses on a specified age group, 65 and older, under any conditions whatsoever, unless the orders are definite, the ignorance is vast, the insanity is wall to wall, and the hospitals are being incentivized to put people on ventilators and diagnose them with COVID because the payout from insurance is much greater and these hospitals are in tremendous financial trouble. That's murder too. That's a more overt form of murder. Where am I here? 3 minutes left. Wow, that was quick. They never found the virus. As in, they never found the virus. Prove it. You see, again, I have to emphasize, nobody really knows what went on in the lab that resulted in the announcement, hey, we found the virus. Nobody knows. Oh, I guess I should mention one more thing as a sidebar. The PCR test, worthless. For several reasons, which I've detailed, but one of the main reasons is that it will spit out false positives, like coins from a rigged slot machine, because it is cross-reacting with irrelevant germs that are in the body that have nothing to do with anything. Okay? Put that sidebar aside. Holy of Holies, the lab where we found the cause of the outbreak, the pandemic. Really. We deserve to know exactly, step by step, choice by choice, minute detail by detail, what went on in the Holy of Holies that resulted in that announcement. And if you don't think so, think again. On the back of that, half the world is being destroyed, and we are being ushered into a new world order, indeed, a brave new world of technocratic insanity and fascism. So that's why I keep coming back to, I want to know. We all deserve to know exactly what went on. And we also deserve to have a reasonable, coherent, large-scale study of the kind that I laid out done to prove, as well as one can prove, that a new virus emerged and is causing serious disease. There's so much more to go into, so much more. Hopefully we'll cover some of it in the Q&A. But that's my take on the root of the poisonous tree. And then you can just simply say, well, who are the people who are pushing all of this? And they are the poisonous criminals who live at the root of the poisonous tree. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.